We know what we think. What do you think? Call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Call his wife in
405. Mick Monaghan here with you on this Friday morning. How we doing? Time to get up. Let's go. Friday's the best day of the week. We got the weekend coming up. The weather's been getting a little bit better, a little cooler. Let's go enjoy it. And we're coming off a win. Yeah, we're coming off one of those special wins for the New York Mets. It is a good morning for the Met fan. Yes, you're dealing with a Griffin Canning injury. As last night, we saw Griffin Canning in the third inning with two outs, tear his Achilles. And that hasn't been confirmed yet. The manager did say in the postgame that they believe that's the case, but we all know it. As unfortunately, we have become all experts, all sport fans have become experts on what a torn Achilles looks like. We have seen it three times in the last month in the NBA playoffs alone. We saw it with Aaron Rodgers. We've seen it over and over again, and unfortunately, that's what happened to Griffin Canning last night. And despite that, the New York Mets rallied against the Atlanta Braves. They came back. They finished off after what felt like was going to be a series loss after losing the first two games of the series. They lose their starting pitcher in the third inning, and instead, Austin Warren, who was called up earlier in the day, steps in and gives them a great outing. You got Nunez coming in, hasn't pitched really well all year for them, steps up and gives them a couple of really big innings. And the New York Mets get enough offense from Soto, from Taylor sacrifice fly, to Pete Alonso with three hits in this game, and Jeff McNeil kind of bookends the two games that were so important for this team. He starts it on Wednesday night with an incredible home run robbery playing center field. Just one that made him look like such a seasoned outfielder. The way he timed his jump was incredible. And he kept that game scoreless instead of 2-0 Atlanta. Coming off back-to-back losses to Atlanta, five straight losses to Atlanta. If they fall behind in that game on Wednesday night, who knows how that game goes. Instead, you know, Soto has the big game. They win it. And then last night, he gets the two-run single in the seventh that kind of put to bed the Atlanta Braves in that game. And the Mets have one of those wins that you look back on at the end of the year. If they have the season that we're all hoping they have, this is one of those games you look back on. The starting pitcher goes down. The mood is sucked out of the building, sucked out of the team. Because when your guy goes down like that, and we all know it's severe, even if you don't know it's an Achilles heel injury, even if you weren't, you know, you're on the field, you can't tell. You saw by the way he was on the floor. You saw by the way he was hobbled walking off. That's a significant injury for a guy who's been great for this team, a guy who I've been calling Exhibit A for the success of the pitching lab in Griffin Canning, who's been unbelievable this year. Maybe the last three or four starts, not so great, but certainly all year has been great. Has not really pitched like this his entire career, despite being a fairly high top draft pick. And he was finding himself here with the Mets. And not only was he important for the Mets, but just as, you know, as a friend, as a teammate, this is a guy who is on his way to earning some money, getting a contract this coming year. You know, maybe starting what could be a promising new career after floundering with the Angels. And instead, the season ends in a heap on the ground. And this Met team gets off the deck, gets, again, Warren and Nunez do unbelievable job being thrusted into a situation where I'm sure Mendoza didn't know how the hell he was going to get through nine. And they get enough big hits. They win a game now that feels like the turning point and the beginning of really climbing out of what has been the worst slump of the season. And they finish off this Braves series by taking the last two, salvaging a split in this four-game set. Now they go to Pittsburgh to take on a lousy Pirates team, and hopefully you could start to build momentum. Now, it's being reported that Manaea felt good throwing in his bullpen, so hopefully he's a week, 2 weeks at the most away from rejoining this staff. You know you're missing Senga. You know you're missing McNeil. Blade Tidwell is going to be called up to join the team, so you know you're going to get some Blade Tidwell starts. And yeah, Griffin Canning is going to hurt this rotation now that he's gone. There's no doubt. But that's the kind of win that galvanizes you. Those are the kind of moments that you look inward and can call back to whenever your team is going through struggles, whenever you have to overcome something. You can go back to moments like this where it felt like, you know, I don't know, all hope is lost is probably a bit strong, but a moment where you felt like, man, we're in a tough spot with our bullpen already, right? We've been talking about it for the last week and a half. One of the bigger issues with this losing streak, one of the bigger problems with the team right now is that the starting rotation is not getting deep into games and the bullpen's being way overused, and your pitcher leaves with a devastating injury in the third inning. And a guy who was just called up comes in and stems the tide. You find a way to win. You win a game against Atlanta. You get big hits from guys who've struggled against Atlanta in Pete Alonso and McNeil. And now you go to play a bad Pittsburgh team hoping to build momentum. These are the kind of wins that change your season. These are the kind of wins that get you out of the slump. It's the kind of wins you can look back on as you move forward. It's the kind of game, you know, the cliche answer is it's the, you know, the championship DVD. This is one of the signature games on that, on SNY's yearbook 2025. This is one of the signature moments. And we'll see Howie Rose talking about it. Well, that night when Griffin Canning went down, you know it. You know it! And now they have to follow it up because it's meaningless if they go get their ass kicked in Pittsburgh. Can't happen. So they got to figure out a way to win some games in Pittsburgh. Got to take at least two out of three before heading back home against Milwaukee and your New York Yankees. So a big win for the Mets last night. Yankees were idle. Starting a series tonight against the A's. Coming off a win to salvage one game out of the three in Cincinnati. Need to start turning it on as they will come home for a quick three-game set against the A's. And then they'll turn and hit the road and go into Toronto for a big series because, yes, Tampa Bay is right on their tail with half a game back, but Toronto's not too far back either. So this is a big stretch for the Yankees, a big stretch for the Mets. They find themselves back in first place as you're waking up this morning on this glorious Friday summer morning. The Mets are back in first place. The Yankees are still in first place. And despite how ugly it's been, both of these teams, to quote the great Aaron Boone, have it right in front of them. And then, of course, there's the Knicks search, who they have every candidate under the sun in front of them. It's just a matter of when they'll pick one. 888-808-1019. Let's get to your calls here on this Friday morning. Rob in Midtown. What's up, Rob?
What's happening, C-Mac? How are you, brother?
Good. How are you, bub?
Doing good. Waiting for this rain to stop so I go for my run. It's a little rainy out right now, C-Mac.
It's a little rainy in Midtown?
Yeah. And, you know, that enhances the smells.
It enhances the smells.
That's correct. And, you know, the good news is it keeps the unsavories off me when I'm jogging. Right? And I have to jog at this time, C-Mac, because if anybody sees me jog, they'll probably call an ambulance for me because that's how slow I move.
Yeah.
Well, right? Most people can moonwalk faster than I jog.
Listen, as long as you're out there making it work for you, don't worry about how slow you go.
You're right, C-Mac. Speaking of slow, the Knicks coaching search. You know, you don't fire a guy and not have a plan, and then you cast this wide net with all the attributes, what the perfect coach should be, and any coach should be, right? And then, you know, you can't just rely on other teams letting you talk to their coaches, and then you have nothing to offer in compensation because you sent five picks away from Mikal Bridges. It doesn't make sense. You don't have anything to give.
You'll give away a second round pick. I mean, they're not going to hold you.
But what good coach is going to want? Yeah. I mean, maybe Jason Kidd because he's not, you know.
Well, I mean, he doesn't care what the compensation is. That has nothing to do with the coach.
I get it. But what the Mavericks are essentially rebuilding at this point, so they're going to want more than the second-round pick, even though Jason Kidd is no prize. But I don't understand a couple of things. Like, number one, why are they so intransigent about not talking with Mike Malone? I don't understand that. He's out there. Yeah. He's fresh off a ring. I don't get it.
No, I mean, you're right. He was a name that we all expected to be a major part of this coaching search, and it's felt dead upon arrival. Like, there's not been any word on him at all. I don't know if he's not interested in the job. I don't know if he wants to take a year off. I don't know the circumstances, but yeah, it is. He's a local guy. I don't know if I expected him to get the job necessarily, but I am surprised that he's not even really a candidate from the jump.
And who did Mark Jackson murder right? That they covered it up and they don't let him have another job. I don't understand that. I think that Mark Jackson is an excellent coach and has an excellent basketball mind, and he brought, you know, Golden State right to the precipice and handed Steve Kerr a team on a golden platter. I don't understand what he did that he's not allowed to have a job in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that he's not allowed. I'm surprised why everybody's clamoring for him, other than he wore a Nick uniform and he wore a St. John's uniform. I mean, again, I have nothing against him, but we talk about how Tibbs has a ceiling. Like, you just put it very kindly, saying he handed a team over to Kerr with a golden, you know, golden platter, which is, you know, ironic with a punny with the Golden State Warriors, but he couldn't get over the hump with them. Like, and I know there were outside circumstances that led to his ouster, and not just the failings on the court, but they took another step with Kerr. Kerr was the right coach for the job. That's what we think of when we think of, like, he's, I don't want to say poster boy because that's a bit strong, but like when we talk about Tibbs only takes a team so far, you need the next kind of coach to take him over the hump. Like Mark Jackson, they were better defensively. The Golden State Warriors, look at their rankings for under the time of Mark Jackson. The offense is what struggled. They were better defensively under Mark Jackson. And then with Kerr, they flourished offensively. Like, Kerr came in and did the job. And I'm not saying he can't get another job, but what makes him a candidate for this one? Because you know the name, because he played for the Knicks and because he was a St. John's star. Like, that's it. Other than that, I don't think we'd be. There are other coaches who've had successful runs with teams and then didn't get over the hump. Or like, why Mark Jackson? I think you're right. There's been a lot of, like, there's those kind of coaches throughout the years that you're surprised don't get another shot. Like, Willie Randolph is a name that we talk about, was successful with the Mets, fired unceremoniously on the flight to L.A. very famously. Never given another opportunity to coach. Jim Fossil, you know, did a really good job with the Giants, took him to a Super Bowl, never got another coach. Belichick, he got other opportunities. Brian Bullock wins a Super Bowl with the Ravens, doesn't get another coaching opportunity. Like, there are some guys that were puzzled that don't get more jobs. And certainly, I'm not saying that Mark Jackson never deserves to coach again. I'm just curious why Knicks fans suddenly want to throw his name in the mix and act like it's big, it's some big injustice that he's never got another job, when that's been going on for years now. And I don't know what makes him a candidate for this job over others. Like, what about Mark Jackson? You're going to tell me he did such a great job at Golden State? Again, someone came in and took that team to higher heights than he did. He should have the same MO that Tibbs has. And if he never wore a Knick uniform, I don't think we'd be talking about him. That's not a name that would excite me necessarily. I don't disagree with the sentiment. I'm surprised he never got another opportunity necessarily. Again, there were some circumstances outside of his hiring and some things outside of his firing than just on the court. Some things inside the team, some things players had an issue with. But, yeah, I'd be okay with him getting another job. I don't know why it has to be the Knicks and why all of a sudden now we decide that Mark Jackson has been treated unfairly, or what would make him a candidate for this job other than we know him. 888-808-1019. Look, I don't know who it's going to be. And at this point, and it's not that and to your other points about Jay, they're not going to get more than a second round pick. They know that. That's the going rate for a coach. They're going to get a second round pick. They're not going to get more than that. They don't want to trade him. They don't want to trade him. But if he makes it to the point where they have to move him and he wants to go to the Knicks, they're just going to get whatever they can from the Knicks and move on. The first-round picks for Mikal Bridges are going to cost them maybe another superstar. You know, if Giannis were available, it'd be nice to have five picks. I'm not worried about Jason Kidd. They'll have enough to make the trade for Jason Kidd. The point is Dallas doesn't want to do it. And how much does Kidd want to be a Knick? How much do they want him to be a Knick? And is he willing to rattle enough cages and become, you know, a pain in the ass over there and work his way out of Dallas? I don't know. I don't know the appetite for that. For a guy who kind of has that reputation already, do you want to further it? If it doesn't work out the Knicks, do you get another job after forcing your way out? Because now it would be obvious. it would be obvious they don't want to move him, and Kidd forced his way out. And again, you're right. To even your point about how great of a coach he is, I don't know. I think he's a good head coach. I mean, you want to talk about, you know, knowing basketball and seeing the court. Mark Jackson was an incredible player, but Jason Kidd's on another level. Jason Kidd saw the game of basketball different than most anyone who's ever lived. Like he was an incredible point guard, incredible floor general, and saw the game of basketball on another level, even from Mark Jackson. Doesn't mean he's the better coach or that he's a great coach. I'm just saying, if we're looking for attributes in Mark Jackson, I don't know what Jason Kidd does not provide, plus being in the game more recently and taking a team to the NBA Finals. I think Jason Kidd is a far better candidate than Mark Jackson. And I think he could be a really good head coach here. But even if they work that trade, I'm not going to go goo-goo gaga over it. It's not going to be I'm not going to be like, wow, Jason Kidd, okay, yeah, it makes sense you let go of Tibbs. You didn't tell me Kidd. Oh, you got Jason Kidd? Of course, fire Tibbs. What was I thinking? I'm not going to be like that. I'll be totally honest with you. I still would have rather had Tibbs. There's only a couple of coaches that would have made me truly excited. And as much as I want Jason Kidd at the moment, because of all the names out there, he sounds like the best, it's still not going to be one of the names that get me truly excited to have him take over the team. Spoelstra, you can get truly excited. Whether or not he's overhyped, he only won with LeBron, I still think he's a damn good head coach. He's taken this Miami culture that they've built over there. He's gone to NBA Finals without LeBron. Like, he's a really good head coach. If they were to figure out that, which there's no indication that that's even being discussed, I'm just saying that would be a coach that would excite me. I really think Jay Wright would be a perfect fit for this team. I think he's got the temperament for the NBA. I think he obviously knows the players and Jalen Brunson very well. I think that would be an interesting hire where I would be enthused enough and excited enough where I'd be like, that's really interesting. Let's see if that's the kind of coach who could take them over. He's won championships at the NCAA level with the players on the Knicks. So, like, that would excite me. Outside of that, I don't know. I don't think there is another head coach where I'd be like, yeah, this was absolutely worth firing Tibbs for. I mean, Kerr, since we were talking about him, if Steve Kerr were to leave and come to the Knicks, yes, that would make me excited. But it is what it is. I just hope they find him soon. That's all. And I wish it was a more targeted search that made me really feel like they had a plan. Because to me, and I know Evan disagrees with this, and I've heard him yapping about it a ton, I don't think that a plan is making tears and pointing out good head coaches and then asking organizations if we could talk to them. Like, that's not anyone could do that. That's not a plan. Just because it's an action doesn't make it a plan. Just because they didn't sit on their hands doesn't make it a plan. They didn't have a plan. That's a reaction to not having a plan. Oh, let's ask five different NBA teams if we could talk to their head coach, because obviously they're hired for a reason. So let's see why they got hired. Like, I don't know. It is very frustrating to come off. And mainly, I guess I'm really upset over something very basic, very fundamental, the human condition. I'm frustrated because the Knicks have been a laughingstock since 2000. I mean, we're going on 20 years since, you know, 5 years ago Tibbs came here and changed things. It was two decades of just ineptitude of the highest order where I started to become indifferent to them. I wasn't angry. I wasn't upset. I didn't get pissed off. I stopped caring. That's how bad it was. Indifference is the worst that you could be as a fan. That's the worst. I'd rather be pissed off every day than indifferent. And I started to become indifferent with the Knicks. I took it for granted they were going to be terrible, and I didn't care. And it didn't bother me anymore. And then everything changed over the last 5 years. With Leon Rose, who's still there, he gets as much credit as anybody else, if not more. But it was him and Tibbs, and then Jalen Brunson. But even with Randall, it started to change. And they became competent, and they became a team that you knew would hit a certain level of play, and they'd be in the playoffs. We went into the season last year knowing they were a top five seed at the bare minimum. It was just a level of competence. And then they won that Boston series. And I can't express enough the feeling I had watching the Knicks that night as we're trying to watch both games and we're watching the Subway Series and we're watching the Knicks have a freaking party for three quarters at Madison Square Garden as they were defeating the NBA champions who nobody thought they could beat. Blowing them out, game never in question, just having an out-and-out party. I haven't felt those feelings of being a Knick fan in forever. And it felt good. And I was freaking pumped about it. And I was disappointed that they blew game one. And I was obviously ultimately disappointed they lost that series to the Pacers. No doubt. I hate the Pacers. But I felt like they were stable. I felt like they were good. I felt like they were building. I felt like they were going in the direction. They got better. Second round exit. Eastern Conference Finals. Like, it wasn't like the Eastern Conference Finals came 2 years ago and then they lost in the first round this year. Like, they beat the champion. They beat the team we couldn't beat. They got to the Eastern Conference Finals. We're building. It's a trajectory. It's going up. And then they fire this guy and there's no plan. And suddenly I feel like we're back to being the organization that does things wrong. We're back to being the gang that can't shoot straight. We're back to being, laughed at again. Charles Barkley is laughing at us at halftime, and that's not the be-all, end-all. I get it. I don't really care. I'm not going to go cry in my cereal because Charles Barkley's laughing at us, but it's just like, I thought we were past being laughed at. We're just in the Eastern Conference Finals. And now they throw in this lousy search, and I'm not excited about any of the candidates. I feel like it's been with no direction, and they're already past the NBA draft without a coach, and I got to hire one before free agency, no? I'm pissed because I was happy on Friday, May 16th, to a level I haven't been happy with the New York Knicks in two decades. And that happiness has been wiped away, and now I feel lousy about it. And that's why I'm pissed. It's as simple as that. I was happy, and now I'm pissed. I didn't want to go backwards.
Add WFAN to your contacts to talk New York sports with us at 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 432. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. So this one's just weird and out of nowhere, but it's so weird, I feel like we have to talk about it. So I guess a couple segments ago, I was talking about going back and reliving your life and how, I'm jealous of my 8-year-old who's about to start summer vacation. And I forgot how it came up. We were talking about, we all become that person who warns the youth that they're wasting it. We all become that guy, that person who's like, this is the best time of your life. Don't wish it away. Oh, I want to be an adult. I wish I could make my own decisions. I wish I could go wherever I want to go. I wish I could be on my tablet all day long. When I'm an adult, I'm going to do whatever. When I have kids, I'm going to let them do whatever they want. I get that a lot. When I have kids, I'm going to tell them they can play on their tablets any day. And we're always like, don't wish it away. You don't want to be an adult. And I referenced it to the commercial on How to Not Be Your Parents, How to Not Become Your Parents, those Progressive commercials, they're hilarious. So me and Fleegs were talking about it, and Fliegelman went to go search it and find the commercial. He was going to maybe play some of the audio. But then something happened that I can't get over, and it's in my mind now, and once it's in my mind, I feel like I have to just get it out. So he went to search it, and he typed in How to Not Become. And I guess then he took a phone call and he was going to finish it later. And then he looked back at the screen. In the Google search, when you type in things, it'll then project what you're actually trying to look for. And it'll give you the next few words to see autofill to see if they can, give you an idea of what you're looking for. Well, when you type in how to not become, the first autofill suggestion is how to not become a vampire in oblivion. What the hell is that? How is that the most common search of how to not become? How to not become a vampire in oblivion? And then I clicked on it, and it's pretty much, it tells you how to avoid becoming a vampire. How many people are searching Google how to not become a vampire? And I thought, oh, it must be a movie or a book. I'm not seeing that. I'm literally just seeing tips on how to avoid becoming a vampire. How not to become a vampire in Oblivion. How not to become a vampire in Skyrim. What the hell is... I don't know what that is. Eventually you get down, then there's a whole bunch of stuff that just makes no sense. Mind Flayer, BG3, a feral Fallout 76. I don't even know what those are. I'm not getting into it. I don't want to know. Then you get down to normal things, I suppose, like how to not become a diabetic. That seems like a relatively good question. How do I avoid diabetes? Okay, I get that one. How to not become like your parents. So that's finally what go down to 7 is what we're looking for. How to not become a narcissist. I don't know, but I have the answer to that one. I don't need to ask your stupid Google search how to not become a narcissist. I know how to do that. I'm all I need when it comes to that one. But how not to become a vampire in Oblivion is the top search when you type in how not to become. That's a weird one. Who is that? Like, my sister is into, like, zombie movies and stuff. Like, that's kind of, like, not her, like, main thing, but she likes zombie movies. And I remember, like, as a spoof, she has a couple of books, like how to handle a zombie apocalypse, like a legitimate book. It's not a spoof. It's not a gag. There's a book out there on, like, how to handle a zombie apocalypse. Get to high ground or, like, whatever. Like, they literally have steps on how to survive a zombie apocalypse. Now, I don't think she reads it with the intent of actually having the information, but she likes zombie movies. She thought that would be a funny thing, an interesting thing, and she might have read it, but it's not under the guise of, like, really trying to make sure she's safe for a zombie apocalypse. Who's actually Googling how not to become a vampire? How was that the number? Like, if that was the 10th one, I'd be like, okay, there's a couple weirdos out there. But the number first one, the first two topics are how not to become a vampire? I mean, isn't it relatively easy? Don't get bit by one? How else does one become a vampire?
That's what people are trying to find out.
Right. To avoid becoming a vampire in the Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion, I guess maybe it is a video game then.
Yeah, Oblivion is a game. I think Skyrim is too.
Okay, cure yourself of the yeah, okay. So I guess it is like a video game. Is there a way to avoid vampirism? I mean, that's a weird one. Just caught me off guard. Maybe it is a video game now that I'm reading through the whole thing. But that's still how not to become a vampire in Oblivion. How not to become the Knicks head coach. Well, you got to make sure you play the bench. That's what we should write. How not to become fired by the New York Knicks. Well, you got to play this 51st overall pick. That's for sure. You got to keep those rotations loose. You got to make sure the bench plays. God knows, you know, Tyler Kolek better be in your rotation. Get along with the front office. Make sure the players know their roles. That's how you avoid becoming an ex-New York Knicks head coach. And that's what they're looking for right now. And we'll see if the Knicks can avoid making the wrong decision. And that's the other thing about it, too. I'm just parrot, like, they've made one good coaching hire in the last 30 years. One good one. I mean, Woodson had some success. I mean, D'Antoni had been a good head coach in this league. It didn't really work. He did give us Linsanity. You know, Larry Brown is a Hall of Fame coach where it worked everywhere else. Like, It worked everywhere else. He took the 76ers to the finals. He won with the Pacers. He won an NBA championship with the least talented team and you know, pretty much widely considered the least talented team to ever win a championship. He won at Kansas. He won everywhere he went. It was a disaster for the Knicks. Disaster. Nobody else could get it done. Tibbs came in here and changed it all and gets to the Eastern Conference Finals and they're firing him so they can go on some rando search with every single different criteria a coach could possibly give them as the example of why they're looking for a new head coach. It's crazy to me. It's crazy to me. But thankfully, hopefully, at some point, this will have to come to an end. I do agree with the sentiment that just because Nico Harrison came out and said they expect Jason Kidd to be the head coach, it doesn't mean Jason Kidd is no longer the head coach of the team or no longer an option. I still think he's a viable option. I still think there's a chance he's the coach. But how long can you wait for him? And do they honestly, you know, as reports that Mike Brown of the interviews so far, that Mike Brown is the one who stands as the favorite? I mean, is that really what you're going to do? This fan base is not going to rally around Mike Brown. Now, look, it doesn't matter what we think. It matters what happens on the court. So, I mean, we'll all give him an opportunity. And I do think the Knicks are good enough on paper and with the rest of the Eastern Conference being down and dealing with issues and injuries that they have a very good chance to be one of the best teams, no matter who the coach is. But we'll have to see because it's championship mandate. It did get a little bit easier to accomplish that mandate, but like to me, right this year coming up is, without question, the best opportunity they've had to win a championship in forever. It's going to start the season with the best opportunity to win a championship since 99, maybe even before that. And they're heading into this season with not having a coach yet. And the most stabilizing force in the franchise 30-year recent history, they let go. Wouldn't you be more confident heading into this important season, heading into a season where they have an opportunity to do something they haven't done since the early 70s, with a down Eastern Conference, with all these injuries? Wouldn't you want the sure thing of knowing what the Knicks are at least going to be? And I know Tibbs had his shortfallings, and I understand there were issues. And I'm not saying he didn't. I had issues with him. I was part of the minutes police at times. I complain about side out of bounds plays and offensive possessions off timeouts. I've complained about all those things. I think they're legitimate concerns. But he also brought them 50 back-to-back 50-win seasons and beat the Boston Celtics. I'd rather have that coach and the known proven commodity of that head coach heading into this huge season than taking a flyer on another coach. It's very frustrating to me that this season is now going to be this important, this key. On paper, they're the best team in the Eastern Conference, right there with Cleveland. They are favored to, in many books, to be the team coming out of the East, and they're heading into it right now without a coach and without the guy who took them there. So we'll see what happens. I'm very frustrated by the tenor of the search. I'm frustrated Tibbs isn't the coach. I'm just frustrated that I'm frustrated, to be honest with you. So 888-808-1019. The Yankees and Mets have given us a little bit less reason to be frustrated over the last couple games, I suppose. The Mets do rally and take the final two games of a four-game set against Atlanta. And to me, those were huge games with big plays and big moments. If, you know, these two games are the games you look back on if the Mets end up having the season we all hope they have. And it's funny, they're bookended by Jeff McNeil plays, which is funny to me, but it's because I've killed him so much and I still don't know how I feel about him, honestly. But he makes that incredible catch to start Wednesday's game, robbing the home run. I think that changes the game completely. And then last night, he tops off the scoring with a two-run single, a two-out two-run single that changes. Yeah, it was the bottom of the seventh, and they still only had to get six outs, but still, trying to get six outs with a two-run lead and a four-run lead are completely different. That was a huge hit. But obviously, what you got from Austin Warren and what you got from Nunez changed the game. And now you're heading into a series against Pittsburgh with a little bit of momentum, looking to change this narrative over the last week. You're back in first place. These are the games you will look back on the season and say, those were two massive games. They finally beat the Atlanta Braves. You got back into first place. You found out a little bit of, you found out something about yourself to be able to overcome, considering the situation, considering the state of the bullpen and the rotation, to overcome that Griffin Canning injury in the third inning speaks volumes about this group. It speaks to this team. And leaving that game and heading for Pittsburgh, you feel a hell of a lot better. The Yankees with a day off, a much-needed day off after 16 consecutive games, coming off a win in Cincinnati, heading home against a bad A's team that's been really struggling over the last month against pitchers they're familiar with. At home for firework night tonight, I'll be in the building, and hopefully my presence alone will bring the Yankees a victory.
Get connected with WFAN to talk about your favorite teams. The Fan, always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right. What was once a five-hour midnight ride is down to the final 9 minutes. 888-808-1019. This is where we usually breeze through the calls as quickly as we can. It's a segment I like to call Rapid Fire. Sometimes that's literal. Sometimes it makes no sense at all. That's how I do it. Nonsensical. 888-808-1019. So let's get to those calls here. Open to anything here in the last few minutes. Knicks, Yankees, Mets, clearly. So we head into the weekend. I'll talk to you again, obviously, tomorrow morning now at 9 a.m. on the Saturday show. And then back with you on Monday. But let's get to your calls right now. Phil and Howell. What's up, Phil?
Hey, what's up?
What's up?
Same old. I'd like to make a comment about the Knicks with the coaching situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jason Kidd would be the perfect coach, and not only the coach, personality-wise, would be a really good coach for the Knicks. But I don't think he's going anywhere. I mean, to me, it wouldn't make sense, even if he did want the job. I mean, he's in a lower market, with a lower market team. All right. The job is there for him. He's got the number one draft choice in the draft in Cooper Flagg. He can develop him to play the game the way he thinks it should be played, along with the guy's skills to go with it. To me, it wouldn't make any sense. I mean, what do you want to do? Come to the Knicks? You don't make, the championship round and you're one and done? Nah. I think he's going to stay put.
I don't think they would fire him necessarily on 1 year. I know, we talk about a chance. It'll be considered a disappointing year and a failure, but I just don't think if they trade, because they would have to trade a second-round pick at the bare minimum to get him there, I don't think they would fire him off for 1 year. It would have to be a disaster to fire him. You're not going to trade for a head coach and then fire him. I understand what you're saying. We all talk about it. Like, hey, Tibbs got this far. You have to get further. Tibbs couldn't beat the Pacers. You have to beat the Pacers. Like, we all get it. I agree with you. But at the same time, I just can't imagine trading for a coach and then firing him after 1 year.
All right. One more really quick thing.
Yeah.
Jason Kidd, when I remember him playing, was the only basketball player I ever saw that can dominate a basketball game without scoring a single point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, he was.
He was that good. He was that good a floor general.
Yeah, he was. He saw the game on a different level, and he really helped that 2013 Knicks team, the last year of his career. They won 50 games. Like, he was impactful on that team. Without being the old Jason Kidd, he still made a huge difference. He sees the game of basketball like few others. There's no question about it. He was a great, great, great player. A great point guard, a great guy, a leader on the court, a great floor general, as you put it, no doubt. He just saw the game differently. And those Net teams, when he was at his top, his prime, and those Net teams were going to back-to-back NBA finals, I mean, they were fun. It's a long time ago now, but those teams were fun. And he was really good. Again, I don't think he's the greatest option. I'm not going to be overly excited about it. At least it'll feel like it's who they wanted. And I know, I'm big on that. I want the organization to get who they want. They could be wrong. Obviously, they could be wrong. But I want to feel like the organization had a plan. They got who they wanted. And listen, you could luck into the right coach. There's no doubt. You could luck into the right coach. You could want someone else not available, have to settle for this guy, and that guy could be wonderful. Of course. But I don't like the idea of firing Tibbs just to settle for someone else. Richie in Queens. What's up, Richie?
Rich, how are you?
Good. How are you, bud?
Yeah, I am real quick with Kitty. He's the quickest I've ever seen bringing the ball up. Mm-hmm. He was in 7 seconds. He was in the zone, and he still had 16, 17 seconds on the clock to distribute. Yeah, and he was a tremendous player. He'd be a good option.
He's as good an option as they have right now.
Yeah, and you know, baseball, it's so frustrating up and down every day. I would just see 162 games. You know, I got Devers, I got Adames. Both of them have nearly not produced. We just lost 3 to Miami. You just wonder how teams that are so much better, just don't play up to their potential.
I know,
and your
team right now is even worse with runners in scoring position than the Yankees. They have been the worst over the last 2 or 3 weeks. The Giants have hit with lower batting average with runners in scoring position than any other team in baseball.
Oh, we're offensively pretty terrible. Chapman's been hurt. Mm-hmm. We lost Casey Schmidt, but yeah, with the Yankees. Play Dominguez, you know, I was listening to Keith last night, and it's true about Boone. You know what's something? You know when you have a beautiful room, but you just don't like the paint, and you keep looking at the paint job for a year, and you say, you know, maybe if I do something different just to brighten it up, and all of a sudden you get a canary yellow, and it just looks beautiful. You say, wow, what a difference. And I don't want to put the whole thing on Boone, mm-hmm. you know, Chris, but he's just so redundant. Like, the other day with just come out and say, you know what, unacceptable. I can't have him get thrown out. Stop beating around the bush.
He did the interview with John Boy, and he said that the Wells getting thrown out, trying to get a good jump on the 3-2 count from first base as the trail runner, he said that was unacceptable. He said it can't happen. The other ones, he talked about the risk of trying to steal a base. Rice was trying to steal a base. They made a good move. He talked about the idea that they were giving. He was looking into the idea that they were tipping, the idea that he was going to steal because they put on the steal, and immediately they ran the back pick play and got him. When you steal a base or try to steal a base, it comes with inherent risk. And then clearly Dominguez lost track of the count. Like, that can't happen. We all understand that can't happen. But again, we see it everywhere. But if you watched, I know you're a Giant fan, if you watched the Yankees play the Reds made more terrible mistakes than the Yankees did. Like, I'm not trying to excuse the Yankees, but it's part of what's happened in baseball. And if you're expecting, don't watch the post games. He's not going to criticize his players. And I don't think that matters. Do you think Jason Dominguez thinks it's okay to embarrass himself, let his teammates down, forget the count on national television against the Red Sox because his manager didn't come out and say, oh my God, what a stupid mistake. If it ever happens, like, you don't think he talked to him privately? Same thing with Ben Rice. You don't think he talked to him privately? And clearly Wells, he was pissed about and said it can't happen. But he's not going to come out forcefully in the post game and rip his players. He's not. And I don't think that necessarily helps. And no other managers do it either. So you could fire Boone. Who are you going to bring in? Who are you going to bring in? Someone that's going to rip the players? Good luck finding them. Eddie in Rockland. What's up, Eddie?
Hey, knock, knock.
Who's there?
Daniel Jones, starting quarterback of Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah.
And Brett from Long Island and Eddie in Rockland.
He's starting now for you guys as well?
Now it's Dable's time to make his move. But right,
let's go. Yeah, I mean, you know, Richardson's hurt. Or, you know, I mean, they're just not sure about him. Just that Daniel Jones might end up being the starting quarterback out there to start the year. Great. We'll see how they do. I know. Yeah, congrats to the rest of the division. I mean, it's probably, but you're right about Dable. It's time for Dable to prove it. I was talking with Mark Schlereth last Saturday at Fanatics Fest, and he thinks they should just go with Dart and prove that he can develop Dart. I honestly think they're going to be better than people think. Tough division, tough schedule, but I think the Giants have a chance to be better than people think. Thank you guys for calling. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Fleegs on the other side. Everybody, enjoy the rest of your Friday. Enjoy the weekend. I'll talk to you tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. for the Saturday show. The Warm Show is next. Bye-bye. Sports Radio 101.9 FM.